two.
One more time.
Welcome to Hungry Magazine Culinary Podcasting. All of our podcasts can be downloaded at www.hungrymag.com. This week we sat down with Paul Viron of Via in Western Springs. Western Springs is a suburb located southwest of Chicago.
This week we're not changing anything because we're doing a dinner at the James Beard House Monday. So, you know, we just got a lot of stuff going on this week.
How are those preparations going?
It's going all right.
Yeah? You nervous at all? Or?
I am.
Yeah?
I am. You know, I think it's not that I'm nervous with the food or executing the food once we're there. It's the logistics of, you know, point A, packing, making sure you have everything you need to point B, you know?
It's probably
which is out of town, and, you know.
It's not your kitchen either, so.
Yeah, well, I've done a dinner there before. I used to work in New York at a restaurant called March, so, but that was years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I know they've renovated the kitchen. I mean, I'm not as worried about that. It's like getting everything organized.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to get on the plane and go, oh, you know, we left the farm fresh eggs behind, you know? And then when we're in New York, we've got to, like, scramble and find things.
So do you pack everything in, like, dry ice and
yeah,
take it with you right on the plane? Or
yeah, I mean, most of the stuff's got to be checked in, but, yeah. It'll go with us.
Cool.
Yeah, I feel more comfortable, doing that than having it shipped or something.
Yeah.
I have a sausage stuffer that was my step-grandfather's. It was in his family, and we have it. Unfortunately, one of our dishwashers broke off the handle last week, which it isn't that big of a deal, but it's an antique. I mean, it's over 100 years old. So we grind it and crank it through there, you know? You know, again, it's you know, a lot of what we do here is traditional thinking related to food, you know, like, you know, in the growing season around here, it's short, and it seems like it's getting longer each year, which is a good thing for us, but, you know, maybe a bad thing for the planet, but,
right.
You know, so we like to take items that are in season, and we preserve mostly in the form of pickling, you know, some things we just, you know, just can. I mean, really, the only thing that we just can would be tomatoes. We get the San Marzanos from Kinnikinick Farms, which we use like in the mussels, and then there's pickling and you know, again, you know, we make our own sauerkraut. Mm-hmm. You know, all different types. We do turnip, rutabaga, cabbage. We preserve lemons and oranges. You know, we're using preserved oranges right now on a venison dish. We're not using any preserved lemons. Actually, we're getting low on them, but we have a huge batch that'll be done in the next month and a half or so.
Yeah, I did some lemons this summer, man. It was outstanding.
Good for you.
Yeah. First time I had had them was when I was at Blackbird, and you know, after that I was hooked, and I was like, I got to do this at home. So
it's easy.
It is. It really is.
You know, you just take, it's a little bit, you know, a Sunday morning little job, or you know, whatever. It's an easy project, and you have them. But we do about a case of lemons a year, and then we have that option. You know, we have it for all different, you know. What else? Fruits. You know, fruits is definitely a big thing. We make jams and preserves, and then we also do these things called agridulce, which is like a sweet and sour preserve.
Mm-hmm. Like an
agridulce. And I can show you some of this stuff.
Deal?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, I took a jam making class at the pastry school with Christine Ferber.
Okay.
She's from Alsace, and she's a master jam maker. You know, some of her jams and her products are bought by Alain Ducasse and some of the best chefs in the world, you know, and that they serve at their restaurants.
Yeah.
And that's one. I mean, so for instance, like stuff that we do, like Black Mission figs when they're in season, we get, you know, we do a sweet and sour liquid of maybe some spices, red wine, vinegar, honey, a little salt. You know, so we do those things that we incorporate, like our venison entree that we're doing at the Beard House is incorporating a sour cherry agridoo in the sauce.
Mm-hmm.
So, but back to what I was saying about the traditional forms of living that were found, you know, years ago in world, but you know, here, that the whole concept of, you know, in regards to charcuterie, using the entire animal, you know, as much as we can. We don't have the storage to be, you know, hanging.
Sure.
But we do some of that stuff, and then, or at least, you know, whatever we get in, we use everything, and then the same with the food stuff, putting it up or holding it up until, and it does add interest to our food. I think it does.
Yeah.
And I definitely incorporated some preserving and pickling when I was at the Everest Room, because we had a steamer. It was great, and we did pickles and stuff. You know, that we served, I mean, that's, you know, sauerkraut and all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's very Alsatian, you know, so.
Choucroute and all that.
Oh, yeah. Stuff. Yeah, our sauerkraut for the James Beard menu just finished yesterday. So we're packaging it up, and we're going to braise it later in the week. And, you know, we have veal bacon that we make in-house, so we're going to, you know, eight different types of cured meats in there, and sauerkraut, braise it, you know, and we're serving that with whitefish that we're poaching in duck fat, with mahogany clam vinaigrette, and house-made pickles and stuff.
Sounds good.
So I'm excited about our menu for the Beard House, because we're going there with like a lot of Midwestern products. The butter we're going to bring that we're going to serve is from a new organic creamery, Oak Grove. It's unbelievable. I mean, it's not, you know, it's like six something a pound.
Wow.
But it's, I mean, we use Plou Gras, which is a great butter.
Sure.
This stuff, I mean, that's, it makes that stuff taste almost like kind of waxy.
Yeah. I mean, locality makes all the difference. I ate it at Alinea back in October, and they had, I think it was some trout roe that was just like 5 days old from the fish. It was just the most amazing thing I had. It just popped in your mouth. It was so much better than, you know, the cured caviar, or not the cured, but the stuff that's been in salt and, you know, it's been in the jar for a couple months or whatever.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. It's, you know,
That's a great restaurant. Yeah, I just ate there for the first time a couple weeks ago. I had a friend in town, and we did the tour.
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. What do you think about the whole thing? I just interviewed the pastry chef at Moto on Thursday,
really?
Too, which was...
Ben?
Yeah, and there... he was showing...
Sure, it was pretty intense.
He was showing me the laser. I don't know if you've seen, they have a Class 4 laser they got from some guy, the same guy who was doing, like, their ion gun and stuff like that, and they take, like, a vanilla bean and they put it in front of the laser, and they shoot it, the concentrated beam, and it vaporizes the vanilla essence, so it's a little bit smoky, but mostly still vanilla, and they catch it in, like, a wine glass, and they serve, like, a Polyak inside there, and it's, like, this big vanilla-scented Polyak that complements one of their courses, and, you know, I challenged the idea, because I was like, well, couldn't you just, like, torch it or something like that, but apparently, when you torch it, it's too charred, or it's too smoky, and so... This kind of goes from like the solid to the gaseous state immediately through the laser, which, so, you know, maybe it's a gimmick, but it's also, I think, you know, they're achieving something they couldn't do otherwise, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
I'm curious, you know, what I find is interesting about Chicago is you have these two food movements. You have the, you know, what I call, I guess, the Mr. Wizard food movement now, and then, but you also have, you know, I just talked to Sean McClain and Paul Kahn, of course, and you were, you know, there's also the other end of the spectrum, which is very focused on ingredient, you know, simple presentation. You know, it's interesting that Chicago sort of like adopted these two extremes in some ways. And, you know, I don't know what your take is on the new stuff. Do you think it's...
I got to tell you, I was a little skeptical, but after having dinner at Alinea, I mean, I was blown away. You know, I was there with a chef friend of mine who's got a restaurant in Florida I went to school with, and he was in town for, you know, 3 days of debauchery, eating,
mm-hmm.
and drinking. It was fun. But Alinea was incredible.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, the flavors were spot on. The wine pairings made a lot of the courses for me. Not a lot, but some of them, like the wine pairings were just like,
mm-hmm.
wow, you know, this is like, you know, advanced intellectual food, you know. So I know I know Homar does, you know, I think his stuff seems a little bit more scientific, mm-hmm. you know, and I've had some of his stuff just at events, you know, lemon cheesecake, paper, you know, with yeah. a Christmas tree on glaze, and, you know, I definitely commend him as well. I mean, I think it's very interesting. It's really, it's nothing that I'm even remotely interested in incorporating in my food, but it's definitely something I have a deep respect for. I mean, these guys are definitely thinking out of the box, and I think even more so I appreciate it. I mean, it was just the experience at Alenia. I mean, you were there, so you know. I mean, the atmosphere, I mean, I think our place is beautiful, mm-hmm. but they're, you know, they're just, I mean, the banquettes, I mean, the furniture, when you come in and the descending hallway and just
all they got the lighting system that changes.
Yeah, and I mean, just like, you know, the little piece of seared bison on the river rock that was hot and searing on it, and, you know, and the branch of juniper that was burning, mm-hmm. you know, and so it was unbelievable. The whole experience, and I think that's what, so, you know, Moto, I think even sounds to me like even more of like an adventure. You know, you go there, and I mean, he's a really nice guy, and he's very intelligent.
Yeah, did you work with him cool. when you were at Trotters at all?
No.
That was before.
Before, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I'm intrigued by their stuff. I'm not really interested. I mean, some of the stuff that like Wiley does in New York. One of my former cooks is his sous chef, and you know, I mean, they do some pretty wacky stuff too. It's all interesting, you know. We had a guy actually coincidentally here last night, a customer who one of our regulars, friend from Germany, uh-huh. who's here, and they said right here, and the German guy has like some freeze-dried food company in Germany, and apparently it's all very cutting edge and modern. And both Ferran and his brother have been to the guy's manufacturing plant in Germany to talk to them about freeze-drying stuff. And so I'm always intrigued by that stuff. It's just, you know, I like the idea of the traditional way of
sure.
thinking about food, and you know, going to the farmer's market, cooking in season, putting things up, using them when it's the dead of winter. That's what I like, you know.
I read a lot about how, you know, you learned a lot from your family and from your grandmother, and you know, I wonder what your grandmother would think about, you know, that kind of food. You know, would she she'd be like, now?
Well, she's my mom's mom is still around. I think that she would. I think she would get a kick out of it. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I think anybody, Alenia, I mean, that was such a good, it was such a good time. It was like such a show, you know. I mean, we were there for 5.5 hours. You know, we did the wine pairings and just, we had a blast. It was such a great time.
I had the Slovenian wine, I remember, from one of the wine pairings, and I was blown away, and I was like, I didn't even know Slovenia had really good wine.
Yeah. And, yeah, they do.
Know, it was. You know, yeah, there were some things there that definitely I didn't know about, and I was definitely opened up to in that moment. So, which is all you can ask of for a restaurant, I guess. But
yeah, we had one of their servers was out here to eat last night.
Yeah,
which was nice. So
we were talking about the beard a little bit. You know, one of the things I've been thinking about is, you know, Chicago is becoming sort of this big. You know, I think this year it was written about probably more than it ever has been. And you know, do you think that we need a place? Like, why do our chefs have to go out to New York? I know it's like the Carnegie Hall of food, but you know, is there a potential for something like that in Chicago? Would you like to see something like that?
I mean, I guess I would, but it's got to be based on something that's worthy enough for that. You mm-hmm. know, I don't know. I'm trying to think of some people or culinary icons, you know, that are from here. You yeah. know,
maybe even Phil Vitale.
I mean, I hate. I mean, I think to some extent, you know, James Beard is. I mean, that's, you know, I mean, there will only ever be one guy like him. You know, Julia Childs. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, something in her home in Cambridge would be fun, you know, but I don't know, you know, who would be worthy of
yeah,
that, you know?
That's true. That's true. I mean, the philosophy I think you could still have, though, you know, it's the idea of furthering, you know, whether it's named after a big culinary icon, but, you know, just furthering cuisine in Chicago and a similar mission. Or then maybe it doesn't, you don't need to, but, you know, I think it'd be nice if you had a place where, you know, the best chefs in America can come to Chicago as well, and we can have that experience, and we don't have to necessarily go to New York every time we want to experience that. You know, the thing I always think about, especially in art, is how everything is so East Coast and West Coast centric, and, you know, it's the Midwest doesn't get its due. Like, I like the fact that you're bringing all these Midwestern ingredients to New York.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's a great thing, you know, because that consciousness, I think, needs to be spread out as well, because it's just as valuable or just as reasonable as, you know, the East and the West Coast consciousness.
Yeah, no, I hadn't really thought about that. I mean, it would be nice to have, you know, I mean, I like the idea of having, it's great when we have, like, international or national chefs that come in here for events, you know, so, I don't know, maybe some sort of annual event would be kind of neat, you know.
Yeah, it would be cool to do. So you just got the Bonchet Rising Star?
Yes.
How what did that mean to you? Was that...
It meant a lot to me. I mean, it's an award that's, you know, both the nominations are from members of the foundation, but the award or the votes are cast by all my peers. So
yeah, I didn't know that.
That means more, I think, than, you know, an award from the public.
There's a name actually, Bonchet. He's been sort of a. You know, he's been sort of a father of cuisine for Chicago, and you could have the Bonchet House. Some people, I suppose, would say the Trotter House as well, too, you know, with so many folks coming out of there, but...
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, he's known all over the world. You know, he's known probably, regarding an American chef currently, he's probably known better than anybody.
Yeah.
You know?
Thomas Keller.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think if you go to, like, you know, if you're in New Delhi, you know, people know about him. You know what I mean? Like, internationally, everybody knows about Charlie.
That's true.
I think Keller, you know, I may think he would be maybe more well-deserved, you know. I mean, I really respect what he does.
Mm-hmm.
I respect what Charlie does, too, of course.
What'd you learn when you worked with Charlie?
Probably the biggest was product, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, working with the best product. I mean, that's over half the battle. You know, sourcing out, spending the time to source out what's in season, you know, the highest quality stuff that can be easily transformed into something.
Yeah, I know you took a big, or at least I read on the website that you took a pilgrimage kind of before you opened and went to, like, all the kinds of producers and purveyors kind of to find the best of things.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't as extensive as I would have liked to have done.
Yeah.
You know? But we did. We made some trips out to, it was more to farmers in the area, and it was a great experience to see the integrity and the hard work that goes into having whether it's a meat, you know, or poultry farm, or a dairy, or vegetables. I mean, that's just, when the growing season goes on, and even months prior, it's a lot of work for those folks.
How much can you get locally? I mean, could you source this entire restaurant locally if you needed to, or, I mean, do you try?
Well, we like to support regional foodstuffs, but, you know, I mean, our land is Western land. It's from Colorado and Montana. For a while, we had Australian lamb on the menu. So, so the proteins is maybe something not as much. I mean, we're doing a wine dinner coming up here next month with Cavaney Farms, and he's got turkeys and ducks and lamb. So it's literally turkey and lamb, duck, that's what we're going to use for the menu, and the wine supplier it's mostly like Alsatian style whites.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be a lot of fun.
That'll be cool.
And we've done, I did an event at North Pond Cafe with this same farm, and we worked with geese actually for that, and that was fun. So again, like the prefix and things like that, that's where we try to like, hey, let's get in some pork butt from whomever, and we can do like a Milanaise or something as an entree, or you know, some of the things are, you know, I'm trying to think of some of the products that are truly local. I mean, we were using a lot of Organic Valley meats, you know, which is all from Wisconsin farms. Like we had their hanger steak on the menu, short ribs, you know, beef, Berkshire pork we use a lot, and those are, you know, it's a lot of different farms that are following these codes and standards. But it's hard, you know.
Yeah.
Again, I mean, it's hard to, like, you know, the Wetsteins, which is a great farm a couple hours south of here, or not even, and they have great, you know, they got beef, pork, some lamb, but it's not really cost effective.
Sure.
You know, I mean, you can't put hanger steak on the menu, which we have on the menu. I mean, that's like, you get one hanger steak muscle per animal. So it's really difficult. Poultry is best, you know, I mean, we do a lot with Gunthorpe. Poultry is great. Ducks, chickens, because you can use the whole animal easily.
There needs to be an economy of scale for the meat, is what you're saying. And
yeah, it's hard. It's hard, you know. So that's why we try to get into some of that, you know, well, what can we do? You know, what can we do to help them out, you know? Buy a whole spring lamb, work with it, you know. I mean, that's probably what we're going to do for this event in March. We're going to do like a combination lamb plate, and we'll buy a whole lamb.
Cool.
It's hard. I mean, I don't think, you know, some of the other, like, you know, I used to work a lot with Jameson Farm lamb in Pennsylvania. Haven't yet, but I've been thinking about that. And then Four Story Hill Farms in Pennsylvania. When I worked in New York, we bought a lot of stuff from them. And actually, we bought a lot of stuff from them when I was at the Everest Room. So, you know, that book that Alain Ducasse did, the Harvesting of Excellence, or
okay.
What's the...
I haven't... Yeah, I don't know.
But
not sure.
It's a book all about American farmers.
Oh.
You know, tomatoes, just everybody, you know. Dairy, cheese, from all different parts of the country. So it's fun. And my staff, I mean, it's a great opportunity for them, too, to see some of this stuff. You know, I've been talking about getting in touch with Jameson Farms again and using some of their stuff. And
you ever take, like, field trip with the staff and go out to some of these farms? Locally?
Well, only locally,
yeah.
You know, and we are going to do that again. You know, we've been talking with Greg at Gunthorpe about going down there, you know, slaughtering, just so there's maybe a better appreciation for what they do and how it gets from source to plate, you know.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. I was just reading this best food writing thing yesterday, and there's a story in here about Thomas Keller, and he's talking about how he had his rabbit purveyor bring in like 12 live rabbits, and purveyor did the first one, and then he did the next 11, just so he, you know, he respected and knew what he was doing. You know, he said it's so easy to throw a saddle in the trash, or, you know, something if you've overcooked it, and you know, it's like now he realizes how much more important. That's why perfection is important every time, because you kind of have to respect the life and the chain that you're.
Yeah, interesting.
I just thought it was a really interesting story. He was like, it was so scary. He like had to go, you know, because I guess rabbits scream. I don't know, but I don't know. That's tough.
Yeah. So anyway, so yeah, I mean, I'd like to. I mean, I think we are going to do. I mean, there's, you know, you mentioned the ramp dig, and Spence Farm. You know, myself and my son and my sous chef went last year. Unfortunately, this year I'm going to be out of town when they're doing that. But I know David's going to go again, and bunch of other people, and we used their ramps while they were around. We had a cream of ramp soup with house smoked trout, you know. So as much as we can, we try to, you know. The Phantom Farm cheesemaker in Wisconsin, Ann Topham. I just did this cheese event with them, and she had a couple different types of Chev, like a fresh and an aged, and the fresh was unbelievable. So we put a croquette on the menu. It was like a potato and goat cheese croquette. We roll it, we bread it, we fry it with a little mixed green salad with pickled onions, and we make a vinaigrette with our homemade vinegar. I call her up, and I'm like, oh, you know, I need to get some more of that fresh Chev, and she's like, I got 13 goats, you know.
Yeah.
I have no milk and no cheese, you know. So, I mean, that's the benefit of changing the menu often, but that's also the challenge of working with farmers. I love working with them, but, you know, like sometimes some of them, I'm not going to mention any names, they don't have answering machines.
Sure.
Call them up, bring, rings and rings and rings. You can't get in touch with them.
Right.
You go to the market, well, hopefully they'll bring, you know, they'll bring the cipollini onions that they had last week, you know, and then you go down there and, you know, I try to call you, you know. So that's hard, you know. That's all goes back to the, you know, like with the meats and stuff, trying to help them as much as you can, you know.
I heard you and your son like to forage for mushrooms still, is that?
I mean, it's a pastime that I do, and you know.
Do you go out and like the forest preserve?
Yeah,
or?
he just happens to be my son, so he has to come along. He doesn't have a choice. He's too young to have a choice, right?
But
he's only four.
He'll value it years from now.
I think he will. You know, I think he will. I mean, we mostly puffballs and chicken of the woods, sometimes hen of the woods, which is always a good find because we're paying $11.95 a pound for those things right now. Morel mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
I'm from St. Louis. Haven't really found a great place yet for those.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a great hunting spot. I mean, that's like a coveted. You know, anybody that you talk to that hunts for morels and has a spot.
Yeah, it's total secret.
It's like, yeah, I'll take you out there, but first you have to wear this bag over your head.
Yeah.
You know?
I've heard it's pretty intense.
But you know. Like, we had a guy last year that cold called us in the season. He was south from here, and he called, and he's like, you know, are you interested? Like, he read about us in Chicago Magazine, and he's like, I got some morels. Would you be interested in buying them? And I was like, sure, that's great. And I was just curious, like, where he was calling from, because I like to track the season, you know, if he's calling from the southern part of the state, you know. I mean, he got very defensive when I asked him. But we ended up having a good relationship. But that first phone call was very much like, you know,
he's like
negotiating the price, and you know. But his stuff was the tans, and we had him for a couple of weeks. He brought him up, and we had a pan fried morel appetizer.
Mm-hmm.
We'd bread and fry and clarified butter, and it was good.
You know, I read, I think, on Star Shifts that one of your favorite questions to ask a line cook interview is what books they've read.
Yes. I'm
curious what you've read or what you're reading, things that you, your favorite books.
I mean, probably my all-time favorite books are, you know, I love all the Chez Panisse books.
Mm-hmm.
I love the Lutèce book is one of my favorites. The French Laundries and Bouchon are incredible books. What are some other, you know, one of my favorite books is French Regional Cooking by Anne Willen.
Mm-hmm.
She's always written a lot. I mean, she's an American that's lived over in France a lot and has always written a lot about food in France. And a lot of her books are out of print.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I love those
books.
Yeah,
I have to take a look. I'm not familiar.
And then, you know, I've recently discovered a couple books. There's a restaurant in London called Moro.
Mm-hmm.
And the chef owners, I guess they have a summer home in the south of Spain. You know, hence the name of their restaurant is named after the, I guess, Moro in Spanish refers to the Moors.
Okay.
The folks, you know, from North Africa that came to Spain. And, but their books are, I really enjoy their books.
Yeah.
They're very Mediterranean, North African influenced food. And it's been fun to read those. What else am I reading? One of my customers gave me a management training book. conversation with her about, you know, managing people and how hard it is, and how I felt like sometimes, you know, maybe I'm not as kind as I should be about certain things. And so she came in the next day with this book about, you know, managing people, and then there's like a workbook with it, and I was like,
so what about other non-food books? Is there
Then I guess other food books, but more just like reading. I'm reading The Perfectionist. Finally, you know, that was the book about the three-star Michelin chef.
Ah, yes.
Bernard
Loiseau.
Loiseau. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah.
Who killed himself? It was actually a gift from my father-in-law when it came out. I'm finally getting into it. I have a hard time, you know, with having two kids in a restaurant.
Yeah.
A lot of my reading is more like thumbing through, and when I get home at night, I do like to read, but I end up falling asleep, you know.
So, you've been in some pretty big restaurants. I'm just curious kind of what your short take is on, like, what you learned when you were there. So, like, Wayne Nish, you know, March and that.
I think a lot of what I've learned from overview from all of them is that respect for ingredients, you know, sourcing out the best stuff. You know, Wayne always, I felt like Wayne was a real, I mean, he was definitely a mentor, but interesting the way he executes, like, different, like, really completely different cultures. His food, because his father was from Malta in the Mediterranean, and his mother was Japanese. So his food was really, you know, like, we would do a sashimi of hamachi with really good fruity extra virgin olive oil and fleur de sal and minced chives. And I mean, those were the types of things that we did when I was working there. And, you know, I always really respected him because, number one, the fleur de sal was very new in this country. I think he was probably one of the first to even use it. And, you know, and the whole, you know, the whole movement with Spain, I mean, I think he was one of the first to really be a part of that, too. You know, whether it was their olive oils and his partner, like, with wines and stuff like that, and sherries. Hey, David, how's it going? You know, so I think, but his ability to, like, do things that really made sense, you know. I feel like only a few chefs, you know, I'm not really into the fusion food, but some people can really deliver it well with, like, a slight hand. Jean-Georges, he's had definitely, like, global influences, but he's got that ability to, like, I did a stage there when I worked in Ambria at Jean-Georges for a week, and I remember, like, you know, the squab dish that was done in a cocotte with preserved lemons, and it was like, wow, this guy, he's unbelievable. About Wayne, I mean, Wayne was always a big advocate about, like, seasoning things. It was always salt, but it was not always pepper. I've definitely incorporated that philosophy and with what we do. I mean, certain things just are too delicate. We use the telecherry peppercorns, which are really strong. So we don't, you know, most of our vegetables, you know, depending on, I mean, you know, sautéed Savoy cabbage with bacon and duck fat, butter, is conducive to some pepper. But for me, you know, Harry Covert is salt and butter only. It just depends.
Yeah, I think you have to pick
and choose. You know, salads, I love freshly ground pepper. But I really, you know, I remember Wayne, the first day he hired me, we had a meeting in Chinatown in New York. He was like, I want you to meet me at the excellent dumpling house, blah, blah, blah. We met, and it was like, let's talk about salt. And I was like, whoa, you know, these guys, you know. And I like that intellectual way of thinking, you know. Paul Kahn, I mean, you know, I think the guy's a master at his craft. You know, he's a master at understanding flavor, what goes well together. But nothing he does is that complicated.
Yeah.
I mean, it's technique. You know, it's the Thomas Keller philosophy, which is, I think, more of maybe what we incorporate here. It's just, and Wayne did too, but just understanding techniques, braising, and doing them really well. Seasoning really well, cooking things really well, and then combining different flavors. But, you know, I feel like my style of cooking has always has always existed. But I feel like Paul Kahn helped like unearth it.
Hmm.
It was like when I was there, you know, I remember sometimes being there and coming home and talking to my wife about some ideas that I had about certain things. And a week or two down the road, or you know, it was very weird where, you know, Paul would be like, you know, I've been thinking about doing this shore lunch, you know, based on a Native American guides in Canada that take you out fishing, and they always prepare these shore lunch that's, you know, walleye, bacon, potatoes, onions, you know. And then, you know, and I worked closely with him because we did wine dinners together, and, you know, it was fun. It was, you know, I think hands down it was probably my favorite of all jobs that I had.
Yeah, it's bad for a journalist to say, I suppose, but he's my favorite chef in the city.
His food rocks.
I've been back there so many times, and, you know, I've talked to him, and there's just this purity and kind of like this, you really feel, you know, I think what's important to me is the food of love, or, you know, somebody who really cares, and you can just see that every time a dish comes out. Even if he's not making it, he's sort of imbued that in his people, which, you know.
Oh, yeah, his staff is unbelievable. Dylan and Jared and Tara, and they do incredible. And I had the luxury of working with all of them when I was there, you know. But I think that unearthing really, you know. But there was a lot of those things that it was like coincidental. We were like on the same page, you know.
You seem like you knew that's kind of what you wanted to do. I mean, you
yes.
studied nutrition, and then you went to, you know, culinary school.
Cooking school.
Nutrition, I mean, is that something that still comes into play for you in the kitchen? Do you think, oh, you know, this dish is balanced or it has to be balanced? Is that?
I think we think our food is developed seasonally usually based upon produce first. And then it's like, well, let's do this. Let's do guinea hen with that, you know. So I do feel like our food is very vegetable or garnish driven. And I think that's where a lot of nutrition comes into play in terms of, you know, vitamins and minerals and all that kind of stuff. But I don't think our food, I mean, we're not shy about using butter and different
sure.
different other saturated fats, but, you know.
If you, say you were throwing a dinner party
okay.
at your house or whatever, or you do here, whatever, who would you want to invite, you know, living, dead, could be culinary, doesn't have to be culinary. You know, who would you invite? Who do you want to talk to?
It could be anybody?
Yeah.
Well, that's tough. That's a tough question. Well, you know, being a big Jimi Hendrix fan, it'd be nice to have him present. Not sure what I'd ask him. Rachel Carson.
Okay.
Would be somebody I think
yeah.
would be fun to have present, because she's always or has always been a. An environmental activist, and I think Alice Waters
okay.
looked a lot to her for inspiration on what she does, you know, I mean, regarding the community co-op gardens that she started in some of the schools and the school lunch programs, you know, in the northern part of California. Because that's something that, you know, I'd like to maybe look into some of that stuff one of these days, you know, as things settle here and things are, you know, are running well. But Rachel Carson, I think, somebody that's really, again, thinking out of the box,
mm-hmm.
thinking ahead of her time, saying, hey, this stuff isn't right, and we need to look at the right way to do it. So
mm-hmm.
somebody like that, I've always really respected her writing. I guess Hendrix is more of just like, hey, look, it's Jimi Hendrix, you know, who's here eating with us, you know?
Yeah.
I think it'd be fun to have like a Fernand Poin,
mm-hmm.
like a legendary French
mm-hmm.
chef, you know, somebody that, you know, lived, breathed, ate and drank,
yeah.
you know, food and wine.
I love Ma Gastronomie. I read that. I love that book.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great book, you know. I think that book's out. I think it's out of print.
It is. I got it on eBay.
Yeah, eBay's great. But somebody like him that, you know, because I really feel like a lot of times younger, and not that I'm a an older generation of a chef at all, but by any means. But I feel fortunate that I had a chance to work with some old timers, and they instill a lot of discipline and respect. And a lot of American chefs, not really chefs, but just cooks in general, chefs, don't always have the discipline to say, okay, every day, this is how this needs to be done, you know. And some people that I work for, you know, like Thierry, the chef at the Everest Room, Joe Ho, some of these older, you know, they have that, like, you know. And so to talk with somebody like a Fernand Point, who, you know, those guys are the ones that created that, you know, they created the top of the, you know, I mean, that's it all kind of filtered down.
It's that old brigade system.
The pyramid, I mean, that's the name of his place, you know, but you know what I mean? Like, they were at the top, and people that worked for them, and then they went on and did, I think Alain Ducasse worked there. Yeah. You know, and then they, you know, the same sort of
Guy Savoy, maybe too.
I mean, it's great to think out of the box, you know, and I like that. But I think you got to master the fundamentals first, and it requires a lot of discipline. So yeah, Point, Rachel Carson, Hendricks. I'm not sure how that would mix real well. But it's, you know, I don't know, that's a hard question.
Yeah. It is a tough question. Which this next question is
even harder.
And no, it's not even harder. I think it's hard for a chef, or I think it's hard for anybody who loves food. But I always ask it. The question is, you know, I always make some scenario up about you're on death row and it's your last meal.
You know, probably like a sandwich of some sort. I love sandwiches, all different types. You know, whether it's like a Reuben, or you know, just a really good club with roasted turkey, great bacon. Italian, like I love Fontano's, you know. I mean, it probably would be a sandwich.
That's the first time I heard about you, actually. I was in the Fontano's in downtown Elmhurst, and there's the article. And
oh, they
you,
had that
you cited,
up in
yeah, you cited.
I went to the one in Hinsdale afterwards, and I was hoping to get a free sandwich.
They didn't hook you up. Yeah, I've been reading the Nancy Silverton sandwich book this week, actually. I got it from the library. It's a cool book. I don't know if you've seen that.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
I know.
I've actually been there for sandwich night. It's unbelievable.
Is it? I know. I read that you were saying if this gets settled down, you'd like to do a bakery someday, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we make our own breads here. Actually, I've kind of considered stealing that idea from her.
Yeah.
And doing something like that here.
That would be cool.
The suburban market's different than downtown, and you know, it might be like where people with families would go, wow, let's do it.
Yeah.
Sandwich night at V. You know. If there is anything else that we would do, I think for us, we're going to look into more of the agricultural end of it. We're going to take the, you know, the Alice Waters route and maybe do something, whether it's having our own farm, you know, like Stonehill and Blue Hill in New York. What those guys have done, I mean, that's a dream.
Do you have a garden now?
Starting it this year for the first time. I have a house and have, you know, could have a garden, but the last couple of years with two
you got a ton of free time, right?
Two young boys in a restaurant. You know, my grass is dead from the heat wave last summer, so you know, hopefully this year I'm going to try to. It's a shaded spot on the north side of our house, so I'm going to do stuff like Tuscan kale, some greens, you know, just. You know, I want to teach my kids that too.
Yeah.
You know.
This ends this culinary podcast for Hungry Magazine. Check out www.hungrymag.com for more. Four, three, two.